Why don't we start at the side on the left?
Good morning. My name is Nayla Zichel-Sida. I'm the security chief. And thank you very much to all the presenters. It was excellent to get the diverse perspectives from the different countries. And what we pull from it is that even within countries, there's so much diversity within the country. And that a single food security approach doesn't work when you're looking at the different sectors within the country. And I know we've talked about food security in terms of the African context where it's just not enough food production. But what I found really interesting was the Guatemala case, where you talk about the fact that there is enough production within the country, but that it's about access. And in food security, it's very hard for us to understand what that really means when you're coming from an agriculture background, and we do talk a lot about production. But it's your last slide that I really would like a little bit more explanation. When we talk a lot about that in access to a certain group in the country, but one of your slides, and maybe I misunderstood it, was actually talking about production and increasing productivity. And I'm just trying to figure out what you meant by that, and really what is some of the solutions for access, which is such an important component of the food security agenda.
Sorry, can I just build on that? I should consult my colleague, Cida. That's again, so it's for the Guatemala program. My name is Nikita Erickson from Cida. Thanks a lot for your talk, Dr. Monterroso. It resonates quite well with some of the thinking we're doing at the agency on your analysis comparing different types of investments. Some of the things we're doing is about when do you prioritize investments with respect to biophysical approach versus a social investment, particularly when you invest in a drought-tolerant variety versus a social insurance investment that would have a cash transfer to people in times of drought. And I appreciated some of your analysis there. And your talk also reminded me that I had a chat with our CEDA's Guatemala program 5 months ago, and I have to follow up in the next week. And following up on Nayla's question, our analysis of the sort of food security issue in Guatemala is a bit different. Agree that availability is the major issue. According to the latest crop prospects report by our FAO colleagues, I think it's quite positive crop growth planned for Guatemala. Access, yes, is an issue. Problem with our Guatemala program is quite a paradox because the per capita incomes are quite high in Guatemala. We're actually one of our richest country programs. Per capita incomes are over 2,500. And so the issue that we're really concerned is nutrition. And you pointed out Guatemala does have some of the worst nutritional problems in the world, even sometimes worse than Haiti. You proposed agricultural development and economic growth as a solution, but I'd be curious if you can elaborate on how you plan to achieve nutritional outcomes through an ag productivity approach.
Well, I will try to get an answer. They are very interesting questions because they address some key questions that we are discussing now in Guatemala. In fact, well, I started to say that production is not an issue in Guatemala. I mean, we produce enough food, or the food that we are requiring in the country. But apparently, in my conclusion, I said that agriculture is the option. But it is not because of the production of food itself. It is because the poor people are located in the agricultural sector, and we need to generate rural jobs that can be switchable for these kind of producers. So the first idea is that rural jobs is an answer to increase income. And the best jobs that we can generate are agricultural jobs. So there is one idea related with that. If we promote not rural employment, it will be for richest people in the urban areas. But at the same time, a small-scale agriculture has the potential to address nutritional aspects because traditional agriculture produces multi-products at the same time. It has maize production, beans, and other products that are produced in the agro-system, in the plot, in agricultural systems. So agriculture is also an option for nutrition, for job generation, and it can be based on a small-scale farm. I agree, nutrition is a point, but for example, the argument can be, you can still be poor, but perhaps you can be well with good nutrition aspect. That's not possible. Income generation is not the answer, but is the way to get a better nutrition indicators. I'm not sure you are addressing the question, but the point here is that peasant farming, small-scale farming, can generate, can go through several aspects of the problem. Increase income, generate jobs, and generate products that can be used for nutrition.
Thank you. Anybody else would like to comment on this? Or?
We'll take another question. Please.
Hello. My name is Lauren Anderson. I'm studying agriculture and international development here at McGill University. I have a question specifically for food security concerning the Horn of Africa. The solutions or the methods presented were a very top-down approach, relying on international development and research and implementing that into the area. And my question is, after our session yesterday, what is the role of community development, and is there any responsibility of the community to start grassroots initiatives and combat the current lack of participation?
I think, as I was saying in my presentation, this is one of the things we are trying to encourage to bring on good community participation in marketing and education of the interventions this we need to have on the ground. In particular, this project that we are talking about is supported by the Canadian International Food Security Fund. This week, my colleagues engaging with the communities to identify what interventions we are going to adopt. And here you are working across board with the government officials, the communities, the civil society. So we are trying to look at, that was a justification for this project, to try to change the way we are doing things, where we need from technologies we have it and then we just push. So we are trying to engage everybody to come up and say, this is what we want to try and work. So I think there's a shift of the way we are thinking. Many in our institutions have seen and to adopt the value chain approach in terms of engaging partners across the value chain, not just to think it's just technology, we go to the technology. We need to go to the technology with the beneficiaries and the other people's value chain. So that's something we are trying, we are working on, and that was a strong point of this project. Try to see how can it work, how can we do this. It's a big challenge because everyone has their own priorities, but going to see how can we do this together and think around the same.
Hi, my name is Jacques Pou. I'm a food science and agricultural chemistry student at Yale. And I'm kind of building up on what has been previously said. My question is for Dr. Mondroso Rivas. You mentioned again, increasing productivity and that international cooperation is focusing increasing agricultural productivity. And I was wondering what is the importance
of reducing post-harvest losses in this strategy.
So reducing?
Reducing post-harvest losses.
International projects, international operations has several projects in Guatemala, and also the government has some projects related to post-harvest aspects. Definitely, it works in Guatemala. You can see that small farming cultivate their own maize production, the maize that they need for the whole year. And this post-harvest can help to extend the time that the family have food availability during the year. We have several good examples in Guatemala. So I think that that can be an option, but I could say it could be a short-term option. It cannot have a long-term solution. And I am saying that because I want to stress something more about these policies that focus on nutrition versus agricultural productivity. Of course that nutrition is needed, of course that health is needed, but these are actions for the short term, and you need both. You need short term because people is now suffering, but you need also a long-term sustainable solutions. And that's why you need to combine health, agricultural thinking in the whole program.
I'd like to follow up on that question, because I think it's a very important question, post-harvest issues, and we've heard very much about production here. In many parts of Africa, Asia, we're looking at 20-40% plus losses on a day-to-day basis. So if we are increasing production, what kind of work is going on the ground right now with in terms of post-harvest losses?
I think as you have said, when we look at the traditional approach, post-harvest process becomes quite a key intervention in what we are doing. So like in our case in this project, one of the partners, they are involved in human health and nutrition. And one of the things we are looking at is how we can preserve the food for a longer period, and encourage only farm storage facilities where possible, and also looking at the old challenge of pests, like the greater green borer, which is quite a menace, especially for seagulls. Aflatoxin is a great challenge that one time you have good food, you have produced a lot of food, but immediately after harvest, the rains come, then we lose everything again to these microtoxins. So these are things we are trying. We are in the this project that we come up with, very, very much multidisciplinary, and everybody brings their skills on board to try and see how we can address some of the challenges. Some of my colleagues, our colleagues in the project from McGill, we are specifically working on the procedures, post-harvest process, our handling and the preservation. So that is the kind of partnerships we are talking about. It's not just production, but we build production all the way to consumption and marketing.
Thank you. Chukwudi Obinne from the University of Agriculture, Makurdi, Nigeria. Noticed that the speakers have variously spoken about one thing that has been common. Paul mentioned the need for, he talked about farmers' attitudes and behavior being important. Another speaker, I think it was Aidan, also talked about countries that are exposed to the vagaries of nature. And other speakers, so even Rivers, talked about weak knowledge and information system. I'm surprised that apart from the last speaker, I think the first speaker, all the speakers never mentioned anything about training of the farmers. We are aware that even in Africa, in Nigeria, for instance, young people don't like farming, agriculture. But everybody wants to eat food, even all of us here. But there's a need to create awareness and encourage people to take to farming. The interest is not there. You don't see students, young people wanting to read agriculture in Nigerian universities. The elderly ones have no means, resources. We've talked about strategies, technology, to give them improved inputs and all that. We're even worried that even the missing link is training and the encouragement of people to go into farming. And we're worried that even the UNDP, World Bank, FAO, don't seem to emphasize to push training. They mention training, but they don't emphasize farmer training and education. If you don't create awareness, who is going to go to farming? Nobody's interested. So I think there must be a need to create awareness. Serious enlightenment can be needed, particularly in Africa. This is very important. The last speaker mentioned it very well, which is very good. Because even with the Canadian sponsor funding of somebody mentioned about funding, I didn't say about anything about farmer training. So who is going to be interested? You produce, who is going to produce? Because if I'm not interested, I won't go into production, whether young or old. I think I wanted to make sure that any intervention should include these companies. And in addition to that, there must be good governance. Thank you so much.
I'm not sure exactly of the question, but if anybody would like to.
Let's say comment.
I think we can comment. Okay. I think just to comment on the question from Nigeria. I think the point of farmer training that you are mentioning is very important. And for example, in the southern African countries that I mentioned, I can tell you a very interesting story whereby. In the 1990s, a lot of those countries went through the World Bank Economic Structure Adjustment Programs. And part of the whole deal of Economic Adjustment Program was a reduction of the size of the public service. That public service included, cutting back on extension services, where previously extension services like farmer training was conducted by government officials. The sort of capitalist thrust was that the training must be demand driven. So a farmer must stand up and go and look for an extension worker who is going to train him. And of course, if you're a small farmer, whether in Zimbabwe or in Guatemala, you don't do those kind of things. And now what you find is that in a lot of places, the training is now being undertaken by NGOs. And an interesting angle to NGO training is that when they invite you to come for training, they pay you. And then, of course, that becomes almost like a conundrum, whether the people are going there to be genuinely trained for farming or they're going there to get a bit of pocket money in their pocket. But otherwise, the issue of training is it's very important. I think that's a comment that I can make. Thank you.
Please.
Canada does work with smallholder farmers. Some of the smaller farms that many of the members of the panel at times discounted, such as subsistence farmers, as a true or a key part of the strategy of addressing food security. And it's been our experience that it's very successful, targeting subsistence level farmer, increasing their seed security, diversifying the crops and crop varieties on their farm, providing training without paying the farmers, are all successful strategies to increasing food security at the household level because you access those that are hungry more quickly, and at the community level because as they increase their production, which they do, they feed they supply the local and regional markets. But I haven't heard a lot about investing in those very small farms as though they aren't part of the solution. So I was wondering if you could speak to that.
In the slide that I show where we have several peasant farmings, I said landless and then subsistence and then some transitional farmer and then commercial farmer. And sometimes projects come to the poorest and NGOs to the richest. And in the middle, there are some producers that have options, but they are somehow not attended. But the people, farmers or peasants that have less than 1 hectare or less than a half hectare of land, the option can be agroforestry in the kind of I forgot the word in English, sorry, but they have agricultural systems, horticultures in close to the house, where they cultivate maize and vegetables, and they can have animals for self-consumption. So one of the main sources of food for these kind of producers come from these gardens close to the house. So in this kind of producers, you cannot have income increase, but you can address nutrition and food security. So it is a very important factor of food security strategy, a long-run strategy, I can say. And you can generate jobs at the with commercial farming, that they have more than 1 hectare, and they can produce, they are linked to the market, etc. So these are very important for food security.
I think I can just add a little bit on the issue of investing in the smallest of the small farmers. But I think in work that has been done by the CGIR, probably IMI, if we can also confirm, I think they found that if you want to have impact in some of the interventions that you make with the small scale farmers, really there is a sort of a cut off point. It doesn't have to be necessarily the size of the area that the farmer is cultivating, but it could be the resource endowment level of the farmer. You know, that below a certain point, it's probably a charity case rather than something that you could possibly intervene and bring up in terms of increasing productivity, either for nutrition or for for food security, or for cash crop production. I think that's just my comment on that.
Thank you. For the three of us who have come from Nigeria, from the University of Agriculture, this is the first time we have had the opportunity to attend this conference and interact with the international group. Sometimes when you are not there, you can't be sure that points that you need to make have not been made earlier. What I'm going to say, if it's been addressed earlier, well then, so be it. But I would like to know. In many of the tropical countries, I know that we've heard from two Southern African speakers, one from Kenya, I mean both from Kenya, covering south of Southern Africa, generally. One area that appears to be a big problem playing against food security is the provision of infrastructure in the rural areas. In Nigeria, most of agriculture happens in the rural areas. Most of it, I say. Now, there are no roads, generally, linking the rural areas. Many rural areas don't have access roads at all. Now, it isn't really as if the farmers cannot produce. Many of them have the will to produce. And sometimes they do produce, but they cannot take what they have produced to the market because there are no roads. Last year, I'll give an example. A lot of the yam producing communities produced a lot of yams and couldn't sell for whatever reason. Now, it's probably not real to be asking McGill, his university, to think about this problem, the rural infrastructure provision to boost rural agriculture. Because that's really where food security or food insecurity happens. But if it can be done, then it would be a very, very good thing. When people produce food and cannot sell it to generate income to help them live better, then the following season, growing season, they are discouraged, and this keeps happening. And the food insecurity keeps increasing. Is it possible that interventions emanating from a conference such as McGill organizes can include provision of infrastructural facilities in rural areas where these things are not? Perhaps one would say that it's the governments that should, of those countries that should address these things properly. Now I'm saying these are existing, which obviously means that the government are not addressing the problem. And therefore, perhaps one way to go about it would be for McGill Conference to impress on countries such as Nigeria and others to address these infrastructural problems. I want to thank you. Southern African speakers may probably comment on this.
Thank you. Well, I guess the issue of infrastructure is not in doubt. It's a common problem everywhere that, roads and linkages between farmers and, market centers, are quite poor. Just to comment again on your very last statement, a conference like this one, what it does is that it flags the issues that will need attention. And then through the proper channels, through, government and through, IFIs and so on, then maybe, something, gets, to be done. But otherwise, I think in summary, nobody doubts the fact that infrastructure limitations, infrastructure problems in a lot of our African countries are actually a big issue that needs addressing, and also that militate against farmers who have produced enough to be able to take their produce to the market and sell them and get money that can make them have a good living. I think that's what I can say in a nutshell. But also,
I think we can't more than agree about infrastructure. And I think when my presentation, I was saying this is really an intercourse stream that you produce, then you are not able to get to the market. And just going beyond the roads, you talked about even information where the markets are and all that. It's important. And also, when you find out some of these things, again, the whole issue about irrigation, I think, is part of infrastructure investment. We need to find out and see what can we do. I think there are countries much drier than ours and that are able to sustain and to produce enough food if we have got water to manage these climate change challenges. So I think these are things we should all be concerned about. And I think that's what we are trying to see. Some of the causes of food insecurity is like this lack of appropriate infrastructure in different spectrums.
I'd like to direct my comment and question to Professor Wilson, if I could. I'd like to ask you to think beyond your paper, really about the consequences of the kind of changes that policies and programs have generated in the creation of biofuels. But what we also have in the research pipeline is the use of renewable resources, particularly out of agriculture, that could possibly transform both the pharmaceutical sector as well as fibers, plastics, polymer production, and the works. So over the next two, three, or four decades, are we really talking about the transformation of using non-renewable resources for many of these products, including biofuels, to a renewable resource base that's going to heavily lower on agriculture the pressure on food?
Well, thank you for the question. It's clearly well beyond the scope of what we are currently involved in. It's a relevant topic. I think there is going to be a lot of pressure on land use generally to do many other things. And you've listed quite a lot of them. And I think that the big problems that I can see are within the research and development and technical side of that, are that everything that people mention about these types of things seems to be always 5 years away when we come to look for them. Somebody comes up with a great idea, we can do this from using farmland, we can do this from a plant or a crop. How do we do it? We'll set up a research program. In 5 years' time, we'll have all the answers. And 5 years down the line, it was a little bit more technical and complex than we thought it originally was, and therefore we need a bit more research and development. So I can see lots of potential, and I can see lots of potential for farm incomes generally around the world to benefit from using biological processes to replace some of those non-renewable resources. But I do think there are big R&D challenges along the way to capture some of those value-added markets.
Thank you. Question? Or just okay, one more.
I have a question about smallholder productivity that was addressed and looking at the different challenges that infrastructure, roads, training. One thing that you haven't mentioned is a simple thing, that is time. And for women especially, time seems to be one of the biggest impediments to agricultural production, time taking care of children, taking care of sick family members, the elderly. And so I know in many countries the issue of health care, daycare in rural areas is not necessarily linked to agricultural production, and yet it is one of the main factors that makes it difficult for women to engage in the rural economy and raise their agricultural production. So I mean, if you could just comment on that, especially in certain countries, how policymaking around food security and in particular agriculture is linked to a social service delivery in rural areas. Thank you.
I think as we have seen in our countries, again, a lot of the products from agricultural producers are women, and I think the point you are making is quite valid. That whatever technologies or interventions we are coming up with, we should always remember the women are the ones who get to manage most of the whatever you are recommending. So it is upon this that when we are sitting, some of the programs or projects we have, we want to involve both women and men in decision-making to identify what is it that we can actually participate in, and also looking at the ways about the river calendar, the timings, and it's important that we are trying to see how best to deal with it. But I think the challenge is that somebody has to produce the food and there can be all these ceremony things at household level. And the policies are to be put in place. This is the current or give the women the new benefits for what they need. Because what has been happening in the past is women will do a lot of this work, but towards the end of the harvesting, whatever they get, again, the distribution within the household gets skewed towards the other partners in the household. So these are things we have to consider as we plan our programs.
Well, at least in Guatemala, gender issues are key factors in the food security policies. In Guatemala, food insecurity has a women face, a children face, indigenous face. So health programs and nutrition programs are dedicated to mainly to women. But I understand your question that is more related to the activity actions that women can undertake in these initiatives. And in some places in Guatemala, women have some special activities. Sometimes they produce maize and beans. And in some other areas, that activity is dedicated, is made by men. So you need to understand the social processes, even inside a country, a very small country like Guatemala, you can find different situations, and you need to address them adequately.
Thank you. And so I think with that, we'll close this session. And I'd like to, again, thank our panels for their presentations and for stimulating quite a bit of discussion. So